Hey guys, welcome back. BGCKR here. We're back with our weekly recap. No, it's not a recap. Sorry, it's our Q&A video. It is, we're in sort of a pattern, right? We do those two videos a week.
Right.
And for some reason, I feel like it's Thursday today.
And the intro is close enough that that kind of mistake is pretty easy. Yeah. Like I've made that a few times myself.
Yeah, so it's our weekly Q&A content. Links in the description to access this on a bunch of different podcasting platforms. And in all likelihood, you're already on YouTube with us here, but BDCKR Gaming on YouTube.
Right.
So I always say that, in my opinion, podcast is one of the best, if not the superior form to listen in if you're not going to be watching.
Right.
And then you like to tell us what we will be watching if you are tuning into the video.
So it's interesting to me because I think based on just the number of people who watch, that clearly the YouTube video is more popular, but based on the people who actually say stuff about it, that they feel more strongly about the podcast.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Because to me, if I'm downloading this as a podcast, I'm putting it on in the background and I'm going through probably the whole thing.
Right.
Whereas if I'm watching something as a YouTube video, I might click away, I might do something else, whatever. Right. It's more sort of, it's less of a commitment to me when I put something on video versus a podcast. I'm normally, if I started, I want to get through the whole thing. So I imagine that the people with the most stuff to say are the people who are getting through the whole thing. And even if you're paying less, maybe attention per minute you're watching, you know, some stuff will stand out to you. You might have something worth sharing and then you hop on and leave a comment. So to me, it makes sense anyways.
Okay. So what you're going to see on the video that you'll miss on the podcast is Red Sun Deathstroke. So what I like to call the season is the season of the Lost Challenge characters. And so far, we've done a whole bunch of them. We've moved up to, this week, Red Sun Deathstroke. And was Red Sun Deathstroke our first challenge ever? I feel like, if not, it was one of the first. Because this was a transition time where Apple, iOS, was getting the challenge characters not only
I think earlier, Zod was our first.
Was Zod the first?
I think so.
That might have been.
But it's hard to say.
It's very early on. I just have remember because we both started the game separately.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit later. So I feel like that there was maybe Red Sun Deathstroke like right before Raven. And you were playing this and that's what got me started. I saw it. I thought,
oh, I think Zod was probably the first challenge that was happening when we played the game. And I think maybe Deathstroke was the first one that we actually got.
Ah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Right.
So his passive is Red Sun Speed, which is all characters on Deathstroke's team gain 5% bonus speed per Red Sun character on the team. He's got 950 attack and 900 health.
Yeah, so just breaking down what that means is you get 5% increased speed for just having Deathstroke on your team. If you have a full team of Red Sun characters, that's 15% bonus speed for everybody. And it works the same way like the Red Sun Supermans.
Yeah.
Increased attack.
All the OG Red Suns.
Red Sun Solomon Grundy increased health, and Red Sun Wonder Woman's increased power generation.
Yeah, and that was back when Red Sun was the only explicit synergy. There was no other teams that sort of said each other's names in their abilities, right?
Right.
And worked like specifically for each other. There was teams that, you know, made sense together, but nothing was written in by the developers.
Right. So a few things jump out at me. So his stats are very low, especially for a challenge character. I mean, that's clearly a function of his having been introduced so long ago that he was among the first challenge characters we got on Android. Not the collective we of Android players, but the collective we of BDCKR. So, for example, compare him to last week's Arkham Origins Deathstroke. Not last week, 2 weeks ago, sorry. We missed last week. Arkham Origins Deathstroke has 1050 attack compared to 950 for Red Sun. It doesn't seem like a huge difference, but when you take into account Deathstroke's Arkham Origins Deathstroke's passive at Elite 7, it's effectively 1,638 attack versus 950. So really, like, what, almost double?
Yeah.
Close. And Arkham Origins Deathstroke has base 1,200 health versus 900 for Red Sun Deathstroke. But wait, you say? That big difference in attack is from Arkham Origins Deathstroke's passive, you say. So that's the second thing that jumps out. His passive of Red Sun Deathstroke, not that great. I mean, speed can be pretty good when you have a specific benefit, like, say, for example, any of the flashes, right? When you want to do that infinite juggle. But when you're boosting Deathstroke and Red Sun teammates and you're just doing your usual fighting, increased speed is sort of a neutral proposition. I mean, back in the day when he was first introduced too, and we relied a lot more on basic attacks, right? You'd think that getting in basic attacks quicker would help. And maybe it'll help you get attacks unblocked, but maybe it will throw off your timing so that in circumstances when you would have gotten a clean attack, mm-hmm. you get blocked.
Yeah.
Like, it you know what I mean?
It's
like
situational.
Right. It's like there's one of the Supermen that gets increased speed. Mm-hmm. Is it Prime? Gets increased speed when his health gets low enough. And I actually don't like it. It throws off the way I play him.
Yeah.
Which is kind of bad. So and speed, I think, in some ways can be overrated. Arkham Origins Deathstroke, right, last week, he has a great swipe hit that, even though it isn't particularly fast, has a great rhythm to it so that it's easy to get a basic swipe combo unblocked and then get another one unblocked and get another one unblocked. Because for us, there's not that much benefit from a speed passive, it's easy to just slot him into our usual Hawkgirl and Rebirth Raven team instead of trying to do a full Red Sun team and get all the speed advantages of that. Mm-hmm. So you could make the argument that Red Sun Deathstroke gets a lot better with Red Sun Green Lantern, and that's true, but the gameplay video that you're watching in the background is meant to highlight Red Sun Deathstroke, and Rebirth Raven is as good as Red Sun Green Lantern for protecting our team from special damage, right, by stealing their power, mm-hmm. and it has more offensive potential than Red Sun Green Lantern, I think. I think the biggest problem with Red Sun Deathstroke is that we've gotten spoiled with other Deathstroke skins, right? Mm-hmm. I think Arkham Origins Deathstroke is great, Flashpoint Deathstroke, they are both excellent with ranged specials. Red Sun Deathstroke relies a lot on his sword swing, and it's really short. And because his specials are so sword heavy, it is very easy for the enemy to be out of range if you're using Master's Death Cart like we are to build up power when you tag in.
Yeah.
In fact, if you're using the same loadout that we are, Tentu Toto, Master's Death Cart, and Claw Forest, and you're trying to shatter all the opponent's gear on the second tag in, if you wait to get the timing right for the skulls before triggering a special one for Claw of Horus's gear shattering effect, there is that really small window where you will shatter all the gear and still hit with most of his sword swipes on special one. Mm-hmm. But it's really easy to be too quick and all the sword swings will hit, but you won't get the gear shatters off that Master's Death Cart Claw combo. And if you're a little bit too slow, you can shatter all the gears, but you miss some or all of the hits on special one, which kind of drag. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird sort of thing. So out of all the lost challenge characters, this is not one of the top ones that you have to be worried about missing.
Yeah.
He doesn't really bring a lot to the table.
Mm-hmm. So that's our sort of character study for this week. Before we get into the actual questions, there is one thing that I did want to chat with you for a minute about mm-hmm. before I get into it. So I have been actually finally working on a YouTube video idea that I had in the back of my head.
See, because I want to say too, before you even get into it, you've got so many good ideas. Like we've talked about some good ideas before, yeah. maybe not on air, but some just of them, before. Yeah. And I've always felt like, yeah, there's a real good kernel there that would make a really fun video.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to see one of these come to fruition.
Yeah, I think the situation was just right. I mean, the stars kind of aligned in a way that it actually made sense for me to make it. There's a lot of sort of little things that excited me or inspired me, and I'm finally pushing it. And it's not quite ready yet, but I wanted to say I had thought about this for a little while, because there's a couple reasons why I wasn't sure if we were going to talk about it or share the link on this channel. And I've ended up deciding that I'm not actually going to share the link with the channel. I'm not going to necessarily hide it. And if we talk about it in the future, I'm not, you know, you might be able to get the topic in a way that you'd be able to look it up and figure it out, but I've decided that, and one of the reasons is that it has my face in it, and I'm not that worried about doing a face reveal.
Right.
It's just something that, you know, I've kept separate from this channel, and it feels fitting to sort of keep going if there's not a good reason to break with that tradition.
Right.
So what I've decided for it is that I'm going to post the link as a Patreon exclusive for our patrons, because right. it's not at all related to Injustice, right?
Right.
People who like us might want to see it, and so I'm happy to send it to...
And I think our Patreon group are the kind of people who are that kind of... who might be interested in if it's just us.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, going to try to hide it from people. And what I will say is that if you are a super regular commenter and you want to shoot us an email at bdccara@hotmail.com if you want to see it and you're asking for the link, and if I recognize you from the community, I you know, you're a friend of the show, right?
Yeah.
Friend of the channel, I will shoot you the link to that as
right.
well.
Right.
Just because I don't want to necessarily deprive anybody if they don't have a buck to send or whatever.
Right.
But it seems sort of fitting that it's the people who are really sort of motivated to either find it themselves or right. who are supporting us on Patreon
right.
Or community members who maybe don't want to put in the extra elbow grease, right. but who are willing to at least send an email. That feels right to me.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, because I'm not advertising it itself, I think I'm going to have the video ready in about less than a week. I've been working on it off and on. It's been a massive amount of work. I think I spent probably more than 50 hours editing the video on it.
Right.
And it's less than 10 minutes long. But the thing that I really want to talk about it is how satisfying as a process it was to pick right. up something and to have, because I am not skilled in almost any way creatively. In the vast majority of things that people consider creative, I have no real talent, you know, for art and stuff past doodling. And it's fun to doodle, right? But I don't really ever feel like I'm exercising sort of those creative, generative muscles. And this, to me, YouTube, feels a lot closer to one of two things. Sometimes it feels like socializing, right? With this podcast, it feels like socializing,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
And with the talent that I feel like I'm developing, if anything, is like a speaking talent and like conveying information, right? Clearly right. stating what is in my head and getting that thought out and conveying it to an audience, right?
Right.
But it doesn't really feel creatively satisfying. Which is fine. It doesn't need to, right? It's right. something I enjoy as a hobby for sure.
Right. Right.
But this project has felt exceptionally creatively satisfying. And I know everybody's different, but there's something I would just say that if there's something that you kind of want to do, especially if it is related to creation, honestly, can't recommend it enough. There was something really satisfying and crunchy and cool about yeah. getting in there and making decisions and putting sort of elbow grease in. And I felt like I've learned a ton because I've learned so much about video editing. And I just showed you right before we started filming.
Right, right. That was pretty good.
We took the 10 minutes and I showed you what I have so far. And I just, it's nice to do something, work at it. It's mediocre. Like, let's be fully clear. It's not like the best thing ever. It's not great. It's my first go at something. And your first go at something is always going to be just okay at the very best, unless you're like a generational talent, right? Unless you pick it up and you have this like innate real understanding of it, it's not going to be great. But in a lot of ways, going in with that expectation, I'm proud of it. I'm very happy with what I've made. And it's been a really, really fun and satisfying process. And it's very funny, you know, as somebody who has made YouTube videos for years, to be like, this kind of feels like the first YouTube video I really crafted. It's right. a different thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that you might not be happy with what came out compared to what you imagine in your head, but man, there were some fun moments. There were some certain moments where I thought, ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've been trying to do, CGP Grey had a really great video for New Year's resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how he uses themes instead of resolutions. And the reason why, and this is going to be a summary of a video I haven't watched in a couple of years, but the main topic has stuck with me, which is just the idea is that you normally set your resolutions based off of some goal you want to achieve. And the actual resolution you set is different from the actual goal you want to achieve. So your resolution, for example, might be, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week for right. the whole year.
Right.
And your goal is to be stronger or healthier.
Or to lose weight.
To lose weight or to look better, right. right? To have defined muscles. Maybe it's, you know, to be more attractive to whoever it is you're trying to date
right.
or whatever, right? So those are your goals. And the way that that manifests is you say, I want to go to the gym 3 times every week.
Right.
Which
is a good way of doing it, actually, because when you create concrete targets,
yeah.
you have a much better chance of meeting them. Like when you say your goal is to lose weight, it's so abstract and so nebulous.
Yeah.
It's easy just to fail only because you don't have actionable sort of steps.
Yeah. But the problem with making it that concrete is that a lot of people, you know, it's the joke with New Year's resolutions, which is that you give up on them on like January like 14th, right?
Right.
You make it 2 weeks. And the idea is that if you have something that is a binary pass fail, right? The first time you know, your schedule gets messed up and you don't go, you failed your New Year's resolution. You're no longer on that anymore. If your goal, for example, is to like quit drinking and you say, I don't want to have any alcohol for the whole year, right?
Right.
It's really easy to get discouraged. And so CGP Grey talks about setting themes, which is, you know, instead of saying, I want to go to the gym X number of times and work out for like this duration. You say, my theme for this year is health. And you can make a list of ways that you can be healthier. Mm. I want to eat healthier. I want to exercise more. I want to do that. You can be as concrete as you want. But by setting a theme, there's no like mess up or anything happens and then all of a sudden it's over. And what's great about it is it lets you extrapolate larger, right? So instead of just saying, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week and then nothing else, you might go, oh, you know what? I woke up early this morning. I can walk to work. Or I can go for a jog, or, you know, I have more time in the evening. I'm going to cook myself a healthier dinner instead of getting takeout. You can make individual choices and using your theme as sort of a unifying organizational system. All of a sudden, a bunch of stuff that you do all throughout the year that maybe you wouldn't have changed at all can fall under that theme. And so it's an interesting idea, and it's always stuck out to me. And so I've tried to do themes and it have a mix of specific things that I want to do and more broad things I want to do. And so one of the themes that I picked for this year was finding a way of sort of putting myself out there more, and not necessarily in like a dating way, right? Because that's what putting yourself out there often means, but just, being sort of earnest, being perceived by others, being sort of willing to, not necessarily filter like things I've done through layers of like irony and stuff like that. And not to say that any of these are, I think, are huge problems in my life, but it's just something that I think would be good for me to work on an ongoing basis.
To stretch a little bit. Yeah.
And so this video for me felt like a great way of putting myself out there a little more, allowing myself to be perceived. Right now, some people in the community are going to see what I look like for the first time, which is interesting. And, you know, my hair was messy when I recorded most of the stuff. It's, you know, I felt like, oh, I kind of need a haircut, but I put it in there and I made an effort to, because I don't think I needed to show my face in the video at all, because I thought I could. And another thing is trying to tell jokes that I scripted in advance and filmed and then editing around visual jokes. That's kind of scary and hard, because if it's not funny, it might come across as more uncool or whatever, right?
So it was a failure mode of clever is
dick,
evil. Jerk.
Yeah. So I made an effort to try to be funny, even though I knew it was hard and I wouldn't be very good at it yet and all these other stuff, because I thought it was worth it as an exercise. And even if I failed, that I could grow from it. So in a lot of ways, this video, I think, is sort of small incremental steps towards also me doing stuff that I find creatively satisfying, stuff that I find interesting, engaging, trying to build skills and also put myself out there. And all of that, you know, is a really grandiose way of talking about this silly little kind of mediocre, hokey video project.
I think I disagree with you. I don't think it's mediocre. I think it was quite successful. I enjoy it, but I'm clearly biased. Yeah.
Well, and I'm always going to be my harshest critic, but that's the thing, is that I'm putting it out there anyways.
Yeah.
And so this, I guess, is my call to action for the viewers, if anything. I'm not going to tell you to watch the video, because most of you won't be able to, right? My call to action is to think about sort of how you spend your free time, and think about ways that you could do things that are both satisfying, inherently sort of enjoyable, but also personally enriching.
Nourishing.
Because I think being thoughtful about how you spend your time can often lead you down some pretty enjoyable, cool, valuable rabbit holes.
So what's cool is when you were talking about CP Gray's idea of using themes.
Yeah.
I mean, intuitively, it feels like it feels true.
Yeah.
I'm curious about how much more successful it is than other ways to, it's interesting, because I was listening to this podcast about health, and just part of it, one of the parts was talking about getting people to change habits. They didn't even focus on it, but that's the part that I noticed. And it's interesting that their approach was a little different. Instead of trying to make themes, they were actually working harder with the concrete stuff, but then also saying, listen, you're going to fail. And instead of taking each failure as a failure and let it be that sort of new pattern of your habit, to say, okay, I failed. Don't beat myself up about it. Just don't fail twice.
Hmm.
And so, you know, when you do that, make that resolution to go to gym 3 times and you miss the one time, don't beat yourself up over it, because that can end up in a spiral where you end up so frustrated that you just miss 2, then 3, and then 4, is to say, okay, once, not twice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just curious. Like, to me, the idea of changing behavior is really interesting, because I see it a lot every day in my work. And I think it would be so much more helpful if we could come up with an effective strategy.
Yeah. Because changing your own behaviors for the better is probably one of the most important things you can do, and probably also one of the hardest things you can do. Yeah. Maybe you need to watch the CGP Greger video. I don't remember if he talks about studies or research. He might. Right. He often has pretty well-researched videos, so right. I wouldn't be surprised if it was based off of empirical evidence.
Right.
But anyways, yeah. So that's the discussion about the video. Potentially more discussion about it in the upcoming weeks, but if you're a patron, look forward to that. And if you're listening now and you really want to check it out and you're a friend of the show, let me know. We'll get you sorted.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, moving on to the first question of the week. This one comes from Miguel Velazquez, 8199. And they say, I remember watching your videos since was 9/10 years old. It's amazing that you have so much dedication to this game. Time goes by super fast since I'm on my second semester in college, almost turning 20. And just clicking on this channel to see if you guys still upload is nostalgic to me. Thank you again, guys, for the weekly updates. And then sort of a corollary, like a similar comment from Burke's Homemade Memes. I looked at these usernames, looked at them so long ago, and then I blanked on that. Yeah, Burke's Homemade Memes. The lack of capitalization, you need camel case is what it is, right. Which is where even when there's no space and you still do capitalization.
Right.
And so it messed me up. They say, Burke's Homemade Memes, so still amazed that you two play this game. I still remember waiting for this game to come out on Android and was grinding a lot. Left for a while, came back, and surprised that the developer hasn't pulled the plug. And surprised that you two are still doing these things that you two did years ago. I hope we have one last patch. Can be something small, like some changes. Kind of hope they give us the old regime Superman Special 2 and old regime Wonder Woman Passive. With the lack of updates, it gives us more chances to discover the game in meta, which is interesting and puts us in a weird limbo era.
Yeah, so what's neat, or so from Miguel's comment, what's neat is it almost mirrors your experience, right? Mm-hmm. Miguel was watching from 9 to 10 until second year college. You weren't much older when we started that.
Yeah.
And we're now, you're like postgraduate.
Yeah, so in that way, it mirrors my experience. But the way it doesn't is that I was here the whole time. I didn't click away. If I wasn't here, the sausage wouldn't be getting made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what's, I guess for Burks, I think we all wish that, right? Like it is such a good game. I think there's clearly if we hadn't been doing this channel, I would have had more lulls in the time that I played. And I think doing this almost forced me to keep up with it at times when I probably would have taken a break.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'd say that the fact that it's been able to hold my attention for as long as it has is a testament to how good and well-designed and how much fun this game is, leveraging the DC Comics, you know, properties into something that has nothing to do with what I like about comics, except for the characters, right? Like, the gameplay, this is not something that I would normally do, but it's been engrossing enough that, it is that part where, because there's not new content, we're looking more closely at what we've got and finding nuances that maybe weren't as obvious the first time around.
For sure.
Yeah. I gotta appreciate, like, kudos. Unfortunately, I don't think they're ever gonna come back to it. They've got too much on the go. They've got the Injustice 2 that they're pumping out content for. There's talk about another Injustice game. Mm-hmm. And coming back to this, which was meant as a promotional tool for the console game, I just don't see it happening. I mean, what's the console sales now? Probably nothing, right?
Yeah, for either Injustice game. There's just newer fighting games that people are on right now.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It reminds me, I'm glad at least that the servers are still up, because there's a game that I actually talked about on this channel, gave away keys on this channel, and I remember people saying that they bought the game after I talked about it because it was on sale for super cheap when I was talking about it, which is Quantum League, right? It was that sort of time mind-bending shooter. And recently, December of last year, they pulled the servers down. And they put a message in the Discord saying that they're working on a build that will let you just play multiplayer with your friends. But it's the servers are down. It's delisted from Steam. And, you know, that was a game that I thought was just so cool. It was like a really fresh, cool, interesting idea. I really enjoyed the time that I had with it. And it was such a shame that it didn't find the community and the love that it really deserved, right? That
right.
it was,
right.
you know, that it cost the developers so much to put all that time and well, energy into something.
Well, I think that's the big secret with any kind of creative endeavor is that there is just so much content now. And I mean, I don't know if the content was just there and it had to be discovered. We have just such easy access to it.
Yeah.
But that there is so much out there. And the difference between a success and a not success isn't always about quality. It's about finding the audience.
Yeah. I think about the amount of stuff that is actually specifically not great that finds an audience, or the ways that people making their content slightly worse actually helps them find an audience. So like one of the things on TikTok, right, mm-hmm. is one of the best ways to maximize your engagement is to have at least one really obvious mistake or weird thing that's worth commenting on. So, you know, for example, if you have a part of your TikTok where you're like searching something on Google, like opening your tabs for a second and having a really weird tab as one of them mm-hmm. Is a great way of making a bunch of people comment going, hey, did anyone see that? Or, you know, making one really, really obvious mistake that everyone's going to comment on, or, you know, pronouncing a word really weirdly. I saw one person in a TikTok I saw, it was a while ago right now, but it stuck with me. They pronounced like anime, like anime or something like that. And there was hundreds of comments that there wouldn't have been otherwise. That was somebody that were people going like, oh, did you see how he pronounced anime? That's, you know, ridiculous, right? And, you know, the comment wasn't even, or the content wasn't even that bad, right? Like, it was interesting, it was worth watching, but that one sort of twist was one of the things that made it so much more right. algorithmically viable and helped okay. it get picked up. And so, you know, it's just interesting the way that our attention economy works right now, especially with algorithmically served content and especially feed-based content where you're just constantly scrolling through stuff.
Right.
Really, it's what makes you stop and not what's good. So there's a lot of ways in which making your thing a little bit worse, a little bit annoying, a little bit weird, in a way that, you know, I think everybody is aware doesn't actually make the content better, right? Even the creators. I think no creator would go, oh yeah, my content is much better because, you know, I mispronounced that word. But that actually is part of what makes it get picked up.
Speaking of mispronounced words, I'm going to ask you and everybody else to look up William Shatner. I don't know if it's just because I feel like it's hilarious,
yeah.
but I'm sure I'm overselling it a little bit already, is the way he pronounces sabotage.
Sabotage, okay.
And then there's a way he just pronounces it, and it's just, I don't know, I just love it.
There's
as
way,
soon as you said that, I thought of William Shatner.
Benedict Cumberbatch couldn't pronounce penguins. There was like a documentary, like a nature documentary that he narrated where he was saying penguins for like the entire time. Like, and every time you heard him say it, it was very clearly like enunciated wrong. Not like he, you know, moved by it fast. It was just that he was struggling with it. Yeah.
So mainly because you don't do this anymore is that I feel comfortable saying it. But when you were little, you boys and girls.
Yeah.
And squirrels, like squirrels.
Yeah.
You would say girls like squirrels.
Girls and squirrels, yeah.
I think that was just so cute. I just...
Yeah. But yeah, no, so it's just, that's one of those interesting things that I think about a lot, which is the ways in which our systems for getting the content to us, the medium, influences sort of the quality and features of the content itself.
Right, because there's always going to be, because there's going to be differences in the way we access different media that has, I won't say that you can game it, but that has the potential for non-quality to have bigger effects on how it reaches the audience that it actually gets.
Yeah. Like, again, going back to the example of my video, which is going to get no views, but, you know, a lot of what I did is stuff that I found personally interesting that has such limited or like literally like zero benefit for the algorithm or, and for watchability. And I put so much extra time and effort into stuff, as an exercise for myself, fully acknowledging that the value that it was adding to the video as a whole is essentially zero. Right. And you know, I put all this time into editing and I put almost no time into my vocals. I did like basically one take, right? The first time I broke it up into like five or six chunks. And the first time I didn't screw up one of the chunks on my recording, I clipped it and I moved on. And, you know, if I had spent way less time editing, had more visuals, had a camera on and it was on my face the entire time so that there was stuff happening even when I wasn't, you know, editing, and I was just a more engaging, like, performer, that would have made probably a much more compelling video. with like fractional amount of time editing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it would have actually just, for sure, it would have made it easier. I mean, it's, the example I'm thinking of is the Green Brothers.
Yeah.
Where they do that, right? They're on the screen. They don't necessarily do a lot of video. I mean, they're the Vlog Brothers. Those are sort of the quintessential kind of that style of video, right?
Yeah. I saw Hank Green actually talking about Vlog Brothers, and one of the things that he does, which is like very kind of old style YouTube, where he doesn't do any thumbnail work. And that's one of the things on Vlog Brothers. It's one of the things that he's held himself to, which is that he uploads a video and YouTube automatically recommends three thumbnails, which are from three different frames in the video.
Right.
And he always just picks one and that's it.
Right.
No, you know, Photoshop, no title, no whatever. And that's sort of like part of his promise and his contract and the relationship that they build with their audience is that we are just coming to you as ourselves for this.
Right.
And that is part of the appeal and the shtick. And there's, you know, there is editing and effort clearly on display and they're very thoughtful. And, you know, some of those videos are quite good, right?
Yes.
But there, that's a way that they've chosen to do less work for a principled reason, right?
Right.
And it's also not necessarily better for the algorithm, like a good, better. I recently saw a thumbnail for a video that showed up in my recommended feed. And I didn't watch the video. I'm not interested in the video, but it was like an exceptionally compelling thumbnail, which was, it was a video on fan service. Mm-hmm. And the thumbnail was just the word fan service that had been distorted. Are you familiar with fan service?
I'm not.
It's like a term for like anime and like cartoons. And it's basically stuff that is explicitly just for the fans that serves absolutely no value for anything else.
Right.
And what it's often referred in reference to, I'm not sure if it's always, because I'm sort of aware of it, but I don't really watch any anime. I've watched like a couple, but I'm not like an anime watcher, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's often referred to when you're talking about like sexualization of characters. Like if there's like an episode where they all go to the beach and they're in bikinis or whatever, mm-hmm. right? That would be like a fan service episode because there's no plot forwarding. You're just, you know, seeing your all the characters like the most scantily clad you can get them, basically.
Got it.
And so the thumbnail with that context now, it was fan service in massive text and the text was distorted so it looked like it was wrapped around like a sweater that was just in the
tight
shape of
over,
the,
yeah, okay.
it's right, a tight sweater. So it was just a massive pair of anime boobs in a sweater with fan service over it.
So,
you know, I didn't watch the video. The video is like over an hour long, and I'm sure that that's just meant to be the attention grabber thing. And the actual content itself, you know, it had like more than a million views.
Right.
And for a video that long, I imagine that it was like a video essay that actually probably ended up going to some pretty thoughtful places, right? Thinking about what the sort of point and purpose and value is and sort of displaying sexuality and the healthier or less healthy ways. Again, assumption, right? Because I didn't watch the video, so I don't know.
Right.
But I imagine it was more than that. But the thumbnail sticks out at you because you see it and I go, wow, that's it. Just, it's very in your face. You're scrolling through a bunch of, you know, people's faces, small text or whatever, and it's just one big word over
fan service.
Right. And so, you know, thumbnails really do make a huge difference because even though I didn't click on the video, clearly, you know, more than a million people did. And I remember what the thumbnail looks like. I don't even remember the content of all the YouTube videos I've watched a month ago.
Right.
But I remember like this thumbnail design because it's almost a piece of art by itself, right? It's a separate product to the video. And so it is quite interesting the ways that like, you know, a DVD case probably doesn't matter that much for how successful a movie is. Neither does a movie poster, right? Maybe the trailer does.
Right.
But really it's a lot of the, you know, it's interviews, the ads, it's the creators in it, the stars attached to it.
Right,
like those are all things that matter a huge amount.
Yeah, yeah.
And on YouTube, the thumbnail matters massively. The thumbnail and title are the only way that you get new people, right? From YouTube itself. The only way that people show up in your algorithm when you click on them is if the title or the thumbnail is good. And so that's, you know, it's a really interesting sort of paradigm.
It's funny that you say that because we've got our style of thumbnails that is aggressively not good.
Yeah. And our titles aren't great either.
Yeah.
And we don't get that many views. You know, when we had glitches, people saw the glitch and they clicked on it for the title. The title showed that it was the game that they were interested in and the thing that they wanted from the game, which is a glitch. Maybe they didn't know they wanted it, but they said, oh, infinite credit glitch. Let me check that out.
Yeah.
And that is all of our successful videos. All of our most successful stuff by far was something where either the title or the thumbnail or both indicated something that they wanted. And, you know, right. our titles had text on them, right? So you saw, you know, credit glitch sure. injustice. Okay, sure. let me check it out. And so, you know, we have also kind of made an effort. Our stuff is all incredibly utilitarian for yes. for this channel.
That's and, our aesthetic.
Yeah. And that has almost certainly impacted our discoverability too.
Oh, yeah.
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 So it's interesting. It's you don't need to have a good title. You don't need to have a good thumbnail. You know, Vlog Brothers, us, two examples, both equally important. But it has to be a conscious choice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is an important facet of the medium. Anyways.
Yeah, I think we're at time, but there's the perfect next comment to...
Yeah, so who_talking_1870 says, OMG, man, when you stop blah, 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 I'm not can relax and watching movie. And you know what? Good news, Who Talking 1870, we are going to stop talking now.
We're going to stop. No, we're not talking. We're going to stop blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, all the blah, blah, blah done. All right. So I think that's a great place to end it. Let's bring this one back, though, for future week, and we can talk about our favorite hate comments and hate viewers yeah, over the sure, years, because sure. I think that's fun.
Sure.
Always fun to reminisce. Okay, to finish up, I'd like to give a massive thank you to our patrons on Patreon. Thank you to Michael DeVries, Irvin Ruiz, Hoshi127, and Nora Klimek on the credited level, as well as the name scrolling past who have supported us at some point during the pandemic. And we'd also like to give a huge thank you to anybody who's made it all the way to the end of the video and hung out with us for a full 36 minutes and 21 seconds.
Mm.
Yeah, pretty cool. We appreciate anybody who is tuned in for that long. Yeah. So a huge thank you to all of you. We'll see you next time.
Komoda.